You are listening to the English language news of Kan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
It's 8 p.m. in Israel, Thursday, April 25th, 2024. In the headlines, the War Cabinet meets on Rafah campaign and hostage release. An Egyptian delegation will come to Israel tomorrow in an attempt to convince Israel to freeze the ground operation in Rafah. U.S. President Joe Biden and 17 other world leaders called for Hamas to immediately free hostages. An IDF airstrike against Hezbollah targets in two areas in southern Lebanon, a response to launches of rockets into Israeli territory. The Prime Minister says that the anti-Semitic demonstrations sweeping U.S. college campuses are reminiscent of Germany in the 1930s. Scores participate in the Passover priestly blessing at the Western Wall as over 1,000 Jews visit the Temple Mount. The weather cooler tomorrow, but still hotter than average for this time of the year. Good evening, Moedim L'Simcha. This is Aryeh O'Sullivan with the news. A day after Hamas released a propaganda video from captivity of Israeli-American hostage Hirsch Goldberg Polin, the Security Cabinet and War Cabinet convened today for an update on the status of contacts with Hamas on a hostage release and ceasefire deal, and preparations for the Israeli military offensive in Rafah. During the meeting, IDF Chief of General Staff, Lieutenant General Herzia Levy, said the IDF is ready to start the ground maneuver in Rafah, given the order. An official in Jerusalem confirms that an Egyptian professional delegation will come to Israel tomorrow to discuss advancing efforts to reach an agreed outline on a hostage deal. In the meantime, the Saudi Al-Hadath channel reports from Egyptian sources that Cairo is trying to convince Israel to freeze the planned operation in Rafah in exchange for the renewal of negotiations with Hamas. A Kan reporter says Israel has already begun to draw up a new framework that could serve as a basis for the negotiations with the terror group, which have hit an impasse. According to two informed sources, the IDF chief of staff and the Shin Bet security chief yesterday discussed the matter in their talks yesterday in Cairo with the Egyptian intelligence chief. Earlier reports said the Israeli security officials also addressed Egyptian concerns and the IDF offensive in Rafah could set off a surge of Palestinians into Egypt. Kan reported last night that the first phase of the Israeli military maneuver in Rafah would be the evacuation of Palestinians sheltering there to safe zones set up by Egypt and the United Arab Emirates in coordination with Israel in recent months. The evacuation would be gradual from different areas and will take 4 to 5 weeks. Kan reported says the Hamas military wing is also preparing for the IDF maneuver and equipping its 4 battalions in Gaza with supplies and weapons. The organization is also stepping up security around captives held in the southern Gaza enclave and planting explosives along routes IDF forces are expected to use. Reserve Major General Amos Gilad, who headed the Political Security Division in the Ministry of Defense, told Kan that Israel must act carefully in the Rafah issue due to its great sensitivity in the eyes of Egypt. He said that the peace agreement with Egypt is the cornerstone of an entire strategic structure that gives Israel the most extensive security, military, and political power. The Egyptians will not agree to Palestinians coming from Gaza to their territory, he said. They have a lot of reasons against it. In Cairo, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi said his country continues to completely reject the displacement of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip into Sinai, the Sinai Peninsula, or any other place in order to protect the Palestinian cause from liquidation and to defend Egypt's national security. Well, on day 202 of the war, the IDF continues to carry out strikes in the Gaza Strip. 2 terrorists who tried to launch rockets at Israel were hit from the air. The IDF spokesperson said that in the past day, the IDF has hit more than 30 terror targets in the north and the central Gaza Strip and eliminated several terrorists and destroyed terror infrastructure. Kan reports that terrorists in the northern Gaza Strip last night fired mortar shells at the international humanitarian workers and UN representatives on a tour in the area. Nobody was hurt. The tour was stopped and the foreign representatives left the site. The aim was to review a port being built in the area and a floating aid pier. Following the Hamas release last night of a video from captivity of American-Israeli hostage Hirsch Goldberg Polin, his parents, Rachel and John, issued a call on leaders of all the parties who have been negotiating to date to seize the moment and get a deal done and urge their son, stay strong, survive.
My name is Rachel and this is John and we are the parents of Hirsch Goldberg Polin, an American-Israeli civilian who was kidnapped into Gaza 201 days ago.
Seeing a video of Hirsch today is overwhelming. We're relieved to see him alive, but we are also concerned about his health and well-being, as well as that of all of the other hostages and all of those suffering in this region. And we're here today with a plea to all of the leaders of the parties who have been negotiating to date. That includes Qatar, Egypt, the United States, Hamas, and Israel. Be brave, lean in, seize this moment, and get a deal done to reunite all of us with our loved ones and to end the suffering in this region.
And Hirsch, if you can hear this, we heard your voice today for the first time in 201 days. And if you can hear us, I am telling you, we are telling you, we love you, stay strong, survive.
Rachel Goldberg and John Polin. Following the release of the Hamas propaganda video, IDF spokesperson Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari issued an English language statement last night that the IDF will continue to pursue Hamas everywhere in Gaza. No stone will be left unturned in our efforts to find our hostages. Hagari.
Hamas just published a video of 23-year-old Hirsch Goldberg Polin, an American-Israeli boy who was celebrating with his friends at the Nova Music Festival when he was violently and brutally attacked and kidnapped by Hamas on October 7th. Hirsch has been held by Hamas in Gaza for over 200 days. 133 hostages are still being held by Hamas in Gaza for over 200 days in inhumane conditions. Until Hamas releases our hostages, the IDF will continue to pursue Hamas everywhere in Gaza. This is an urgent call for action. We will leave no stone unturned in our efforts to find our hostages. This psychological terror video is not only a reminder of what Hamas did on October 7th. It is a reminder of how sick this terror group is, terrorizing the hostages and their families too. To Hirsch's parents, Rachel and John, our hearts are with you. We will continue doing everything in our power to bring your son Hirsch and all our hostages back home. Your strength continues to inspire us as we fulfill this critical mission.
IDF spokesperson Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari. Families of hostages demonstrated outside the Kiryat defense compound this morning calling for a hostage release deal and for ministers to meet with them. Khan reports that this morning, families of some of the hostages met with the IDF Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi. They expressed appreciation for the meeting and said they came away with the impression these days are critical for the negotiations. Meanwhile, activists from the Tzav 9 movement and relatives of hostages overnight blocked intersections in southern Israel, preventing for 8 hours the transit of trucks transporting humanitarian aid from Jordan to the Gaza Strip. The activists, who were monitoring the convoy's progress, blocked Tel Arad Junction. After security forces cleared that road, they moved on to other junctions. Only around 7 a.m. were the trucks able to continue to Gaza. And last night, stormy demonstrations demanding the immediate release of the hostages took place opposite the prime minister's residence in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv. 4 people were arrested for suspected disorderly conduct. U.S. President Joe Biden met yesterday with Abigail Eden, a 4-year-old American girl who was held hostage in Gaza for several weeks at the start of the war. Abigail was taken hostage after her parents were killed in the attack and was released nearly 7 weeks later. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said the White House meeting was a reminder of the work still to do.
I've just come from being with the president where he got the chance to meet with Abigail Eden, the 4-year-old American who was held hostage by Hamas in Gaza and was released last November as part of the first hostage deal that the president was able to help broker and negotiate. But it was also a reminder in getting to see her that there are still Americans and others being held hostage by Hamas, and we're working day in, day out to ensure all of them also are able to get safely home to their loved ones. You know, President Biden will speak to this himself because this was his meeting, his opportunity to see Abigail, to see her family, to see her siblings. Abigail and her two siblings had their parents killed on October 7th. So they're still living with the tragedy and the trauma of that. Abigail, of course, is living with the trauma of being held captive for many weeks. But this was a moment of joy as well, because she was able to be returned safely to her family. And I think for the president, the most important thing was it was a reminder of the work still to do, and how important it is for him personally and for the government to do all that we can to secure a ceasefire and hostage deal so that everybody can come home. I was just sitting with the President of the United States going through all of the Americans being held hostage and what we can do about them, what their status is. It's something he's personally very focused on, even as he celebrates Abigail's release. So this is something we will continue to make a paramount priority for President Biden and for the United States.
White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. The United States and 17 other countries have called on Hamas to release hostages as a pathway to end the crisis in Gaza. We call for the immediate release of all hostages held by Hamas in Gaza now for over 200 days, a joint statement released by the country said. The signatories were leaders of the United States, Argentina, Austria, Brazil, Bulgaria, Canada, Colombia, Denmark, France, Germany, Hungary, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Serbia, Spain, Thailand, and Britain. We emphasized that the deal on the table to release the hostages would bring an immediate and prolonged ceasefire in Gaza that would facilitate a surge of additional necessary humanitarian assistance to be delivered throughout Gaza and lead to the credible end of hostilities, the statement said. Gazans would be able to return to their homes and their lands with preparations beforehand to ensure shelter and humanitarian provisions, it added. In response, senior Hamas leader Sami Abu Zuhair told Reuters that Hamas would not be influenced by the statement and said the United States needs to force Israel to end its aggression. And the deputy to Gaza's Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar says the group is prepared to lay down its arms as part of a ceasefire deal of 5 years or more, during which the Palestinians will establish a state in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. In an interview with the Associated Press, Khalil al-Hayya said Israel is incapable of completely eliminating Hamas and to date has not destroyed more than 20% of Hamas's capabilities, he said. U.S. President Joe Biden today appointed Lisa Grande as the new special envoy for Middle East humanitarian issues, the State Department said. Grande, who replaces David Satterfield, is currently head of the independent U.S. Institute for Peace. She previously worked for the United Nations for more than 25 years, a career that included running aid operations in Yemen, Iraq, and South Sudan. Germany announced today that it would resume cooperation with and funding of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, after freezing them due to Israeli accusations that UNRWA staff participated in the October 7th attacks. This came following a review led by former French Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna into UNRWA's procedures for ensuring adherence to principles of neutrality, and that was published this week. The review said Israel had yet to provide evidence that a significant number of UNRWA staff were Hamas members. Well, Israel has flatly denied this. Government spokesman David Mentzer called the report one of the biggest whitewashes in the history of the United Nations. He said UNRWA was a front for Hamas and had no future in the region.
The Gaza operation over the last 202 days, over 6 months, has revealed a wealth of new intelligence gleaned from millions of confiscated documents. First, the involvement of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, employees in the October 7th massacre. Second, the deep and systemic infiltration by those terror organizations, particularly Hamas, into the ranks of UNRWA. Now, these documents reveal that a significant share of UNRWA's employees in Gaza serve in the ranks of Hamas and other terror organizations. Almost 500 of them in military positions, at least 18 school principals. School principals, the most trusted, amongst the most trusted people in society. School principals in Gaza, members of Hamas's military wing. Over 30 UNRWA facilities, 30 UNRWA facilities have been found to contain terror infrastructures such as tunnel shafts. We've already shared this with you, but Hamas operated a high-end server farm directly under UNRWA's Gaza headquarters with communication and electricity cables connecting both compounds. Look, this point has to be made and cannot be made often enough. It is not a case of a few rotten apples, as the Kolonna report makes clear. It is a huge, rotten Hamas orchard. Israel provided UNRWA with information on members of Hamas that are employed by the agency before October the 7th, but no action was ever taken. We have shared this with UNRWA's High Commissioner, Philip Lazzarini, and with the Secretary General, and the former French Foreign Minister, Catherine Colonna. The often repeated claim that Israel did not share information on the UNRWA-Hamas nexus is entirely false. The very fact that this compelling evidence, literally a smoking Hamas gun, has been so downplayed, proves that UNRWA in Gaza is beyond repair. Reforms will not change the basic fact that UNRWA in Gaza is the only UN entity in the world which runs a state-like enterprise, employing 13,000 local staff members, managed by a small number of international staff in an area controlled by a terrorist organization with a genocidal agenda. Israel believes that UNRWA must be replaced in Gaza without hampering the humanitarian effort. And now a final point. Hamas terrorists running Gaza have repeatedly demonstrated that it prioritizes terror over the well-being of Gazan civilians. It exploits them as human shields and views a humanitarian crisis as an integral part of their war strategy. We believe that, unfortunately, the UN's and UNRWA's leadership have chosen to understate the severity of this unprecedented scandal, leading to what might go down as one of the biggest whitewashes in the history of the United Nations. All of us here in Israel are at a loss to understand how anyone can think there is any possible future for an organization like UNRWA, which is just a front for Hamas. I think with the best will in the world, if you want a better future for Palestinians, not the past which they've had since 1948, if you want a more sustainable future for the ordinary Gazans, not for Hamas, if you want a better future for the younger people, for them to have something to look forward to protect their lives, to build their lives, to better themselves, then, you know, thinking that UNRWA is part of that resolution is just ridiculous. UNRWA have kept Palestinians in Gazans as victims. They've kept them downtrodden. They've filled their heads with ridiculous lies of returning to Haifa and Yafo and Jaffa here in Israel and retaking the land of Israel. You know, these are ridiculous fallacies. It's time to face up to the truth. Israelis overwhelmingly want to live in peace with all of their neighbors here, and I'm sure that Gazans must want the same thing, but they must be offered a better future, and UNRWA is part of its past, its destructive past, its terrorist-linked past, and we will no longer be able to live in a world with Hamas umbilically linked with UNRWA. That's no way for a sustainable future, and we will not have it.
Government spokesperson David Mentzer. More news coming up, but first this song. Here's Yishai Ribo with his song, Halev Sheli, My Heart.
הלב שלי נקרא לשניים מה שלא ראתה שפחה למים כמו סופה מן הים עולם כמו תופעה של מרים פועם ואין תרופה בעולם הלב שלי מרים ידיים כבר מועד לא עומד על הרגליים שבר כלי שאין בו כבר מה והשמיים הם לי חומה חבור בתור הים ביבשה ורק אתה יכול להפוך מספדי למחול לזכך את החול לרכך בי הכל, ורק אתה מבין איך לגשת ללב שלי, משכך כל כאב שבי, מרפא את הלב. שלי נקרא לשניים, חציו השם וחציו לשם שמיים, כמו סופה מן הים עולם, כמו תופעה של מרים פועם, ואין תרופה בעולם ללב. ורק אתה יכול להפוך מספדי למחול, לזכך את החול, לרכך בי הכל. לגשת ללב שלי, משכך כל כאב שבי, מרפא את הלב. צר שמציק לצר, ואין ציר שיצק לצור, רק אני מול ים שלם ולב שבור. ורק אתה יכול להפוך מספדי למחול, לזכך את החול, לרכך בי הכל. לגשת ללב שלי, משכך כל כאב שבי, מרפא את הלב. ורק אתה יכול להפוך מספדי למחול, לזכך את החול, לקדש בי הכל. משכך כל כאב שבי, מרפא את הלב.
Prime Minister Netanyahu ruled, contrary to the opinion of the Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, that an Israeli judge and two foreign observers will visit the prisons where terrorists are imprisoned to check claims that Ben-Gvir is harassing them. A statement published by the Office of the Minister of National Security sees the Prime Minister's decision as bowing down to Britain and harming Israeli deterrence. The announcement also states that the information gathered by the foreign observers will trickle down to Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, which pays salaries to the Nukba terrorists, and that the imprisoned terrorists will draw encouragement from the visits. The Prime Minister stated that the Political Security Cabinet will hold a separate hearing to decide on the nature of the information that will be presented to the Israeli judge and the foreign observers. The confrontation in the north, the Air Force fighter jets attacked a Hezbollah military structure in the Alma al-Shab area, as well as rocket launching positions and terrorist infrastructure in the Kafar Shuba area today. The IDF spokesman says that earlier, IDF forces attacked targets in several areas in southern Lebanon to remove threats. During the day, three launches were detected that crossed the border in the direction of Arab al-Ramshe and four launches to Mount Dov. There were no casualties. Last night, Israeli Air Force struck Hezbollah observation posts, a military building, and terror infrastructures. The IDF said artillery also removed threats from South Lebanon in several areas. The Lebanese newspaper Al-Akhbar reported that the Lebanese transitional prime minister heard grave warnings from Europe and Arab countries of a possible expansion of the fighting. The paper also cited a source close to Hezbollah as saying the terror group in recent days conveyed messages to Israel that it is prepared to deal with any attempt to widen the conflict. And the European Parliament has voted for an unprecedented condemnation of Iran after its attack on Israel earlier this month. With a majority of 357-20, the EU also approved extending sanctions on Tehran regime and its drone and missile projects. In London, our correspondent Jerry Lewis said that the United Kingdom has also announced its plan to expand trade sanctions against the regime by introducing new bans on the export of components used in drone and missile production to Iran. These measures seek to deny Iran access to the components it needs to develop these weapons, limiting its military capabilities. Foreign Secretary David Cameron said, "Today, the UK and our partners have sent a clear message. We will hold those responsible for Iran's destabilizing behavior to account." Now, a midway look at the major news headlines today. The war cabinet meets on a Rafah campaign and a hostage release. This as an Egyptian delegation is expected to come to Israel tomorrow in an attempt to convince Israel to freeze the ground operation in Rafah. U.S. President Joe Biden and 17 other world leaders have called for Hamas to immediately free the hostages. An IDF airstrike and Hezbollah targets in two areas in South Lebanon, a response to launches into Israeli territory. The prime minister says that anti-Semitic demonstrations sweeping U.S. colleges' campuses are reminiscent of Germany in the 1930s. Scores participate in Passover priestly blessing at the Western Wall today as over 1,000 Jews visit the Temple Mount. And the weather cooler tomorrow, but still hotter than average for this time of the year. The wave of anti-Semitism on U.S. college campuses. Former Israeli ambassador to Washington Michael Oren, a lecturer at New York City's Columbia University, which is a flashpoint for the pro-Palestinian demonstration, says that the protests are organized and they are also against the United States. The students there are going through hell, he told Khan, but the demonstrations are also against the United States. They are burning American flags. They are trying to disrupt higher education in the U.S. I call on the FBI to protect U.S. internal security. Someone is pulling the strings there, Oren said. Where Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that the anti-Semitism on campuses in the United States is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. The world cannot stand idly by. He released this audio statement.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel. They attack Jewish students. They attack Jewish faculty. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. It's unconscionable. It has to be stopped. It has to be condemned and condemned unequivocally. But that's not what happened. The response of several university presidents was shameful. Now, fortunately, state, local, federal officials, many of them have responded differently, but there has to be more. More has to be done. It has to be done not only because they attack Israel, that's bad enough. Not only because they want to kill Jews wherever they are, that's bad enough. It's also, when you listen to them, it's also because they say not only death to Israel, death to the Jews, but death to America. And this tells us that there's an anti-Semitic surge here that has terrible consequences. We see this exponential rise of anti-Semitism throughout America and throughout Western societies as Israel tries to defend itself against genocidal terrorists. Genocidal terrorists who hide behind civilians. Yet it is Israel that is falsely accused of genocide. Israel that is falsely accused of starvation and all sundry war crimes. It's all one big libel. But that's not new. We've seen in history that anti-Semitic attacks were always preceded by vilification and slander. Lies that were cast against the Jewish people that are unbelievable, yet people believe them. And what is important now is for all of us who are interested and are cherish our values and our civilization, to stand up together and to say enough is enough. We have to stop anti-Semitism because anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine. It always precedes larger conflagrations that engulf the entire world. So I ask all of you, Jews and non-Jews alike, who are concerned with our common future and our common values, to do one thing. Stand up, speak up, be counted. Stop anti-Semitism now.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Police arrested student protesters at the University of Southern California today, hours after police at Texas University aggressively detained dozens in the latest clashes between law enforcement and those protesting against Israel on campuses across the United States. Amid the unrest, the White House expressed States President Joe Biden's commitment to freedom of expression on campuses nationwide, while reiterating the importance of demonstrations remaining peaceful. The president believes that free speech, debate, and non-discrimination on college campuses are important, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre told journalists at a briefing. Well, the anti-Israel demonstrations are spreading to more U.S. campuses. We spoke with Dr. Ari Berman, the president of Yeshiva University in New York City, about these demonstrations. And he told me that his university is experiencing an incredible increase in enrollment as it provides a place where Jewish students are nourished for who they are.
College campuses are under great distress right now. Mm-hmm. Jewish population. These are very significant turn of events with the encampments and the protests and the rise of anti-Semitism, and it needs to be met head on and dealt with directly.
But why are universities struggling to defuse this?
Universities had to express their core values with the diversity represented on their campuses, particularly now. What's happening is that because they have not differentiated clearly and educated, there's a difference between Hamas and the Palestinians, that a lot of rhetoric for people who are think that they're ostensibly protesting are actually for calls for the elimination of Israel and its Jewish citizens. This is a moment for education, which is what these places of higher education are supposed to do. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be teaching differentiation. They're supposed to be teaching that Hamas is a terrorist organization to eliminate the Jewish state and all of its Jewish citizens. Therefore, there's a whole intermingling of populations that are rising up with this anti-Semitic rhetoric.
Well, what's the situation at Yeshiva University? Are you seeing any increase in interest by Jews to come to that university?
Yeshiva University has experienced an incredible increase in our enrollment. We already have the longest wait list we've had in our history before October 7th, just by the Jewish students who wanted to come to study by us. But after October 7th, the enrollment has spiked even more. We have transfer students from other universities, students expressing their interest in attending a campus that actually nourishes who they are, as opposed to puts them on the defensive. And that's the big difference. You know, in other campuses, Jewish students are finding that they need to work to protect themselves. On our campus, they're actually growing and being nourished and maximizing who they are as future Jewish leaders.
Well, I want to ask you, do you think that this is a fad, a sort of spring break, flash in the pan, or something radically changed at U.S. universities?
I think that this is something that is inherent in the university system that needs to be addressed. This is not a matter that's simply going to go away. It's part of this whole binary philosophy of placing people either as the settlers and the colonizers versus the victims, and Jews in this very narrow prism are seen as colonizers and aggressors. It's all mixed with much of the theories in America about race and privilege. And this is something that education institutions are supposed to be doing, which is to educate, find differences, and to teach complexity. And that has been missing from universities. I do think with that, there's a moment of high tension because of the war in Gaza. And, as this war gets executed and hopefully comes to a conclusion that ensures Israel's safety, then there will be reduction of the overt tension that exists right now. I do see that. Having said that, there really is a core problem that needs to be addressed, which is a very narrow prism of how to view the world and the Jewish people.
Dr. Ari Berman, the president of Yeshiva University. Now this song, Bimkom Shir Eres, a lullaby by Geva Alon. Even with the heightened focus on an IDF maneuver in Rafah, in the southern Gaza Strip, Israel must keep its eye on Iran. This according to Dr. Eyal Khulata, a former national security advisor under the Bennett-Lapid government and currently a senior international fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. In a briefing to the Jerusalem Press Club, he gave his analysis on the recent regional developments.
We have to talk about Iran because I think this is the major parameter that has changed dramatically over the last couple of weeks, and this will also have a direct impact on what happens in Lebanon with Hezbollah. The Iranian decision to attack Israel the way they did on April 13, I think, came to as a surprise to many in Israel and I think around the world. This was not, I think, what the Americans, as I understand it, felt based on the that they delivered to the Iranians, which basically was President Biden's one word, don't. I think the Americans believed from the Iranian response through the various channels that there will be a symbolic a retaliation attack on their behalf. What they fired on April 13 was nothing similar to symbolic. The only reason that only one Israeli child was injured was because Israel has very good air defense capabilities and very good partners and a coalition stretching from Israel eastwards almost all the way to Iran, with the Americans leading the Middle East Air Defense Coalition that was so effective. And that night, if we didn't have that, then immense number of I think casualties, damage, and infrastructure in Israel strategic sites, also in Jerusalem, would have been immense. We wouldn't be talking the way we are at the moment if this happened. This was the Iranian intent. Otherwise, they wouldn't have fired 300 or maybe even 500. I saw some reportings of projectiles, both ballistic, cruise, and drones towards Israel. This is unprecedented. No one has done that ever. And Iran did, that was an act of war. The reason Israel decided to respond the way it did comes a lot because we had an opportunity not to work and operate automatically, but to hopefully be a little bit more strategic, which is something that this government sometimes was able to do. And I think the war cabinet, with the composition, the unique composition it has at the moment, was very important to put some sense into the response, because Israel had an opportunity to operate according to its interests, strategic interests, and not necessarily according to the circumstances. We didn't have to be dragged into another wide, direct conflict with the Iranians at the moment, which would definitely have entailed full war with Hezbollah while we're still pursuing what we're pursuing in Gaza and the release of the hostages in from Gaza. So we had an opportunity to project our capabilities, to prove, I think, to everybody who was really looking and watching, that while the Iranians' numerous projectiles cannot penetrate our air defense, we could do this with a very surgical strike, damage an important asset. What I saw in the reporting, and I believe it is true, is a radar of a S-300 air defense battery, a Russian air defense battery. And I think this message is very clear to the Iranians. Israel is taking a risk that the Iranians may think that Israel did not respond more than that because we are deterred or afraid, or the Americans are not on our side. That could be true. If this is the case, they're miscalculating. I think the approval of the package in the Senate and the signing of President Biden proves yet again the strong, ironclad, as President Biden calls it, commitment of the United States to Israel's defense. It doesn't mean that the Americans were looking for an escalation in the Middle East. I think that the Americans are too worried about the implications of the use of force, but that's their calculus. On the Israeli side, I think the war cabinet managed to strike a good balance between the other issues. What we need to remember as it comes to Iran is that the ball that we need to keep our eyes on is the nuclear program of Iran. And when it gets to that, this is what we will need to decisively go after, because if Iran goes nuclear, what we've seen in April 13 would have been dramatically different, even if they won't use it. Just the ability of them to threaten to use it would have changed the calculus dramatically. Israel cannot get to that. I think everybody needs to understand that Israel cannot get to that point. Neither would the pragmatic Arab countries around us. And we need to remember what our priorities as it comes to Iran, and not be diverted by other issues. The war in Gaza is big enough a distraction as it is. Having said all that, what we should expect in the north, I think Hezbollah would probably continue to check our borders. They're not interested in a war. If they were, it would already have opened, especially after the fist fight with the Iranians in April. But they will continue, I think, to challenge. The Israeli government has a strong dilemma what to do about this. I think we would see more and more debates within the Israeli establishment, government, political echelons and figures, how we should proceed. If Israel will not go to war with Hezbollah at the moment, maybe the proper way is to define a time in which we state to everybody, Hezbollah included and everybody else, that our civilians are coming back to their homes, to rechange the calculus, because at the moment it's very easy for Hezbollah to keep firing at our towns because they're vacant and they can do a lot of damage to real estate with very few injured or casualties, which they know is what will trigger Israel to escalate. This balance isn't good for Israel. At the moment, we are still continuing. The IDF is still continuing to target them, I think, very effectively. The number of Hezbollah terrorists who are killed in this, not a war, right, but it has been waging for 5 months now, is higher than the number of Hezbollah terrorists we killed in the Second Lebanese War, the number of commanders that are hit, infrastructure. I think the IDF is gaining I would say tactical, important, but yet tactical gains in southern Lebanon, but this will not prevent Hezbollah from being able to aim at our communities, and this is not enough for us to bring back our civilians back to their homes and their towns. So this will be the dilemma that the Israeli government will face.
Of course, you mentioned that the number one issue that we'd be thinking about is the nuclear issue, and of course this is where the international community comes in. But if we take it down a notch to what we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, do you think that we're done with the current tit for tat? We saw Israel striking against S-300 in Isfahan, and a couple of days before, obviously, was the strike that you had mentioned. How long do you think this will go on for? Do you think this is behind us for now, or what are your thoughts?
So I think this round, if we can call it this way, is behind us, especially because the Iranians chose to deny Israel's action, right? I mean, once they went public to their own people and to the international community saying that nothing happened, that they shot down 3 drones, and that was it. Whereas, of course, I think the audience knows that this isn't the case. The Iranians chose to put this behind them. This has happened before, right? I mean, Iran has a habit to deny things and actions and operations and things that happen inside of Iran for years, especially when they don't want to act. This has been, by the way, part of the covert nature of things. As long as Israel did not fully admit what we did, Iran had a deniability that would allow them to choose whether or not to act or not. You know, maybe if we hadn't bragged about killing the Iranian general in Damascus, which, by the way, I thought was an important mission. He was not there for vacation. He was there with the top IRGC officers planning how to expand the threat for Israel in the northern front vis-a-vis Hezbollah and other proxies. I thought that was a justified action. By the way, it was not a consulate. It was not an embassy. It was a building, a command post that they were using. Unfortunately, in a lot of the international media, they kept calling it a consulate or even an embassy, whereas that is not the case. Completely justified action, I think, by Israel, given what they were doing there. Maybe if Israel hadn't been so overt about our accountability for that attack, then April 13 would have been prevented because Iran wouldn't want it. But this wasn't the case. In any case, they did not respond to what we did on this airbase of theirs. This closes this round. I think that Iran might believe that this will have an effect on Israeli actions in Damascus or Syria in general and in Lebanon in the future. I hope they're not wrong about this. Israel must continue their efforts in the northern front. And if the IRGC will continue to plot there against us, then we need to target them. Again, this would have been my recommendation had I been National Security Advisor to this government as well. And I'm sure that this is the advice that they're getting from the IDF, from the security establishment, and the War Cabinet would probably follow that advice. And then we will see if Iran decides to continue in outrageous rounds of attack like they did in April 13, targeting civilians after their officers have been targeted in a something that can be called war zone, because this is what they were doing and plotting. Their response was completely off the charts, hence Israel responded as well. So I think the future will be determined by the way the Iranians will decide to approach. At the moment, they decided to close this. Israel will continue to operate, I'm sure. And if Iran will continue to be off the chart, then Israel will need to escalate as well. I think Israel has proven, at least for these stages, that we have escalation dominance. We have better capabilities, and we're not afraid to use them. But we're not looking for full escalation. We'll need to follow and see what happens.
Former National Security Advisor Dr. Eyal Khulata. Khan reports that IDF combat soldiers who completed their mandatory service of 2 years and 8 months are unable to leave the country because they are under a Tzav 8 emergency order without their knowledge. The soldiers were issued the order automatically and have been receiving wages as if they were doing reserve duty, even though they are already home. One of the discharged soldiers who completed his service 2 months ago told Khan he had to cancel an airline ticket he had purchased. The IDF spokesperson said the step was taken until legislation is passed extending military service to 3 years. This in response to the IDF needs due to the ongoing war. A judge in Peru has ordered the detention for a year and a half of an Iranian national and two Peruvian citizens on suspicion of trying to murder two Israelis who live there. The three are suspected of conspiring to commit an act of terror. Law enforcement authorities believe the Iranian, a member of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard's Quds Force, made contact with the Peruvians. The Israelis they allegedly tried to murder are a tour guide and a cafe owner. In other news, in the United States, New York's highest court has overturned Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction, citing prejudicial rulings by the trial judge in the landmark Me Too case. The state court of appeals found that the ex-movie mogul was unfairly impacted by improper decisions, including allowing women to testify about allegations not included in the case. As a result, the court has ordered a new trial, reopening a painful chapter in America's reckoning with sexual misconduct by powerful figures. Weinstein, who's 72 years old, has been serving a 23-year-old sentence in New York prison following his 2020 conviction on charges of criminal sex act and rape in the third degree. Despite the overturned conviction, Weinstein will remain in prison due to a separate conviction in Los Angeles in 2022, where he was sentenced to 16 years for another rape. At the Western Wall in Jerusalem, thousands of Jewish worshippers attended the priestly blessing presided by Israel's chief rabbis. A special prayer was also being offered for the return of the hostages. And over 1,000 Jews visited the Temple Mount today during Passover. Finally, the Magen David Adom Blood Bank reports that blood unit supplies are low due to a drop in donations during the holiday period. Magen David Adom calls on the public, especially individuals with type O blood, to donate. More information can be found at the Magen David Adom website. Taking us up to the weather and return headlines is this song, Tirkod Lenetzach, Dance Forever, recorded by Infected Mushroom and Omar Adam. It's become a sort of anthem for some of the October 7th massacre victims.
שוכב בחול איתך, הראש בעננים. תני לי שתי דקות איתך, ילדה של החיים. שתהיה לי מאושר, תמיד אמרת זה העיקר. והכאב על הפנים שלך אף פעם לא ניכר. בדוק היית גם מתעקשת ואני לב ממתכת. אין מצב שאת הולכת, כן אחרת זה נגמר. עכשיו נשאר לי רק שקט ואין לי אף אחד. הלב שלי צורח, כי היא תרקוד לנצח בשקט, ואין לי אף אחד. הלב שלי שוכח, שהיא תרקוד לנצח. הראש בעננים,
תן לי שתי דקות איתך מלאך של אלוהים שתהיה לי מאושר תמיד אמרת העיקר ואיך תמיד חייכת שיספרו לי שנגמר בדוק היית מתעקש ומשחק תמיד באש אין מצב אתה הולך איך הלב שלי נשבר עכשיו נשאר לי רק שקט ואין לי אף אחד הלב שלי צורח אתה תרקוד לנה
Taking a look at the weather and cooler temperatures are expected tomorrow, but it will still be unseasonably hot. Haze is lingering. On Saturday, cooler with a chance of local rain, mostly light. Temperatures forecast for tonight and tomorrow, Jerusalem 24 to 26, Tel Aviv 26 to 25, Haifa 25 to 28, Tzfat 21 to 29, Tiberias 22 to 32, Beersheba 28 to 29, and in Eilat from 27 tonight going up to 34 degrees centigrade tomorrow. Now another look at the main news headlines. The war cabinet meets on the Rafah campaign and hostage releases. An Egyptian delegation will come to Israel tomorrow in an attempt to convince Israel to freeze the ground operation in Rafah. U.S. President Joe Biden and 17 other world leaders call for Hamas to immediately free hostages. An IDF airstrike hits a Hezbollah target in two areas in southern Lebanon in a response to rocket launchers into Israeli territory. Prime Minister says the anti-Semitic demonstrations sweeping U.S. colleges' campuses are reminiscent of Germany in the 1930s. Scores participate in Passover priestly blessing at the Western Wall as over 1,000 Jews visit the Temple Mount. And the weather cooler tomorrow, but still hotter than average for this time of the year. That's the news. Join us again tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on Kan Reka, the foreign languages channel of the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation. Watch our 2 p.m. newsflash on the Kan English Facebook page. Together with sound engineer Michael Oshvang, this is Aryeh O'Sullivan wishing you a good evening and shalom from Jerusalem.